Defense Department officials are pleased with their first ever bug bounty. At very low cost, they attracted nearly 2,000 hackers to have at it with public websites and identified a slew of cybersecurity weaknesses. Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu writes about it in this week's edition of the DoD Reporter's Notebook and joins me now with more. Jared, let's start with the first item. A bug bounty that the DoD conducted found some bugs. They harvested some bugs.
They did indeed. We talked about the launch of this when they first opened the challenge up a couple months ago, and now the results are in. But just to refresh what's actually happening here, bug bounty is actually pretty common in the private sector, but this is the first time the federal government has ever done one of its own. Essentially, what you do is you offer bounties for individuals who can come in and look at usually public-facing website-type things that are accessible to the public, and then you offer rewards for anybody who can point out security vulnerabilities that you haven't noticed yet and that obviously you haven't patched yet. So they got some pretty good results out of it. They got a total of 1,189 reports of security problems during the 3 week this, what's called Hack the Pentagon is their term for the bug bounty, during the 3 weeks that was running.
That's brave, you know, just putting out a word like that.
Indeed. But their counterpoint would be, you know, the Chinese, the Russians don't need an invitation. They're already doing
that's
it.
True.
So hopefully this would only be attractive to white hat hackers because of the money involved.
And I think the most amazing statistic that you have was that the first report came in just after they started.
7 minutes after the midnight launch of this back in mid-April. Yeah, that's right. So either people were, you know, just sitting there waiting for the actual opening of the contest to start and they already knew what they were doing, or there were a lot of security flaws. And it looks like it looks like there actually were a lot of security flaws. So again, they got 1,189 reports over the course of the 3 weeks when this is running. A lot of those obviously are duplicates, because if it's a common problem, it's going to be found by a lot of people. It turned out that they ended up validating that 138 of those were verified security vulnerabilities, individual discrete security vulnerabilities, and then they've spent roughly the past month going back and remediating all these, putting in security patches, doing all the various fixes that are necessary. And these happened, as we said, on various public-facing websites that are all run by the defense media activity. So defense.gov, DavidsHub.net, where they release all their imagery and audio and video files, all things that are open to the public. So the end result here is that they think it was really successful, partially because of how many bugs they found, but also the low cost at which they did it.
That is really amazing too.
Yeah, it kind of is. The whole thing cost $150,000. About half of that was just
$8 per hacker.
Right. I mean, that half of that is the cost of administration, and half of it is the cost of the actual bounties they paid, and the bounties were kind of based on how severe was the vulnerability that you found, and how many of them did you find. So it ranged all the way from, I think there was one guy who only got $100, but another hacker made up to $15,000 by combining a whole bunch of fairly severe vulnerability reports.
Well, to pay a contractor, I hate to say it, an integrator or some sort of a security contractor, probably would have been $1.5 million or $15 million to do the same, you know, 10 times or 100 times that much money.
Certainly in the seven figures, and Secretary Ash Carter made that point to us at the Pentagon on Friday. This, you know, $150,000 ain't nothing, but it's not, you know, it's not the more than $1 million that we typically spend when we ask somebody to come in and do a formal vulnerability assessment. So the next step here, Tom, is they're heartened by the results of this, and they want to find ways to extend this to things that are not public-facing websites, which obviously most of the IT systems in DoD are not. They are intentionally hidden from the public internet for reasons we can all understand. It remains to be seen exactly how you take this sort of crowdsourced approach to security, as they call it, and extend that to things that, again, are intentionally not visible to someone who's sitting, you know, at home in the garage or in their basement. The best thing that you can really think of off the top of your head is that you take people that already have active security clearances. Maybe those are people who have recently retired from the military, or they work in the contract community, and you you're obviously working with a smaller pool there, but you then take the same approach and just say, okay, guys, have at it. See what problems you can find on this sensitive system, and we'll give you access to this network for a very defined purpose for doing that.
So basically, they like what they found and they like the process, and we might see more of this.
Yeah, I think we're definitely going to see more of it. Even just on the public-facing websites piece, all of these sites that they ran this pilot on were run by the Office of the Secretary of Defense at the very high-level Pentagon. So what they're doing now is creating a designated contract vehicle so that the military departments and the defense agencies can quickly get these bug bounties on contract and run versions of their own. And there are actually companies that organize these bug bounties for private sector companies for a living. The one that DoD happened to use is called HackerOne, based out of Silicon Valley, and they just offer this entire thing as a service. They go out and recruit the individual white hat hackers. They have this sort of automated triage process that weeds out the noise and the duplicate reports. So that's part of what made it easy for the Pentagon to do this.
We're speaking with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu, and also in your notebook this morning, you talk about the DoD CFOs, the chief financial officers, getting on their hind legs about the idea of getting that clean audit. They're demanding something in to enable them to do that.
Yeah, and they feel like they're really approaching the finish line here, and the finish line has been established by Congress. Congress has told DoD in legislation, thou shalt have fully auditable financial statements by the end of fiscal year 2017, and they think that they've made enormous progress over the past 7 years. They've been working toward that goal. And then we see in the Senate version of the National Defense Authorization Act that there would be some pretty substantial changes to the organization of DoD if they get their way during NDAA negotiations this year. So they would create a new undersecretary for management that would move a whole lot of DoD organizations within that new undersecretariat, including, importantly, the Defense Finance and Accounting Service, which is just a massive behemoth of an organization that runs most of DoD's, at the very high level, DoD's financial feeder systems that are responsible for military pay in all three military departments, paying contractors. And so they are a vital piece of the whole auditability puzzle. That would take it out of the authority of the DoD chief financial officer, and Mike McCord, who is that CFO, is objecting strongly to that. He thinks it would basically break what he views as an unbroken chain of accountability all the way from who he is also an undersecretary of defense, by the way, all the way from his level all the way down to the lowest levels of DoD's financial management community.
Where would it go, DFAS?
So DFAS would go into this new undersecretariat for management, which I've got to say, in the Senate version of the NDAA, that new undersecretary just kind of becomes the undersecretary of everything else. There's a whole lot of stuff that would move in there. The Defense Logistics Agency, the Military Commissary System, the Defense Contract Audit Agency, the Defense Contract Management Agency, the Pentagon Police Force, and the Defense Technical Information Center. That position, you may remember, was originally created a couple months ago. It won't actually stand up in until 2017, but it was created in a previous NDAA a couple years ago to combine the DoD CIO's office with the DoD Deputy Chief Management Officer's office. And now the Senate, even before those changes take effect, is basically shaking things all up again and saying, okay, we're actually going to get rid of another Undersecretary of Defense, the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition Technology
and
Logistics,
right?
Right, yeah. Frank Kendall's job, move a bunch of those functions into the Undersecretary for Management. Meanwhile, we're going to separate the CIO again, make that an Assistant Secretary position, and give him more authority over space, over the management of DoD networks, over cyber policy. So these would all be major changes. And again, back to where we started, the DoD financial management community thinks it would be a really disruptive shakeup as they come close to, they think, getting fully auditable financial statements for the first time ever.
So if you hear grown-ups crying at the Pentagon, we'll know why now.
That's right.
Federal News Radio is Jared Serbu. Thanks so much for that update.
You bet.
You can read his notebook online now at federalnewsradio.com. Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click share with friends.